Hess began to realize that something was going on when he met Hagbard and Dobb for a beer one night in October 1986. "What have you been doing with the LBL account?" Hess asked his friends. "Not much," Hagbard insisted. "But they did appear to have a new scheme. They spoke of a Sergey and a teddy bear, and allowed that they had ways of making money with computer accounts now." Hess was afraid that those two might abuse the LBL account and cause it to go the way of so many other computers locked tight when intruders were detected. He decided that if Carl and Hagbard hadn't done much with LBL so far, this was one hacking sandbox he wanted to himself. A week or so later, he changed his LBL password to just one, LBL Hack. He banished Benson and Hedges from the system and didn't tell Dobb or Hagbard. He wasn't concerned about Pengo. If Pengo wanted to get into LBL, he could probably do it on his own. 2 weeks later, Dobb proposed a business deal to Hess. He needed him to make a copy of the Berkeley Unix source code that Focus had. There would be money in it for Hess. Hess agreed to do it. It seemed like an insignificant favor. Berkeley Unix, the variation of Unix used at most universities and research labs, was widely distributed and easy to license. Making one copy didn't seem like a major breach. It took Hess about a week to pull what he could of the Unix source code together. Carl picked up the software, and Hess thought nothing more of it until nearly a month later, in November, when Hagbard and Dobb asked him to take a walk with them one night outside the Casa Bistro. In a matter-of-fact tone, Dobb came out with what was going on. "The Unix source code was sent to the east," he said, "and that means you're in it with us now." Hagbard stood a few feet back and said nothing. It confirmed what Hess had suspected. Dobb wasn't jesting. In fact, if anything, there was more than Dobb was letting on. It seemed that this was part of an established operation. Apparently, Peter Carl had been making regular trips to East Berlin to deliver the fruits of his friend's hacking and general software piracy. Fancying himself the group's Windmacher, the one who makes things happen, Carl, it seemed, had spent several weeks conducting a circumspect survey of local hackers on their willingness to supply him with material for the East. Hess realized that he had joined a core group composed of Carl, Dobb, Hagbard, and Pengo. Hess gathered that Dobb, while not doing much of the hacking himself, had been over once or twice to meet Sergey as a technical expert. Moreover, Dobb was the group's hub, the only one with a link to each member. Hess went straight home, and the scene outside the bar played back in his head. "Great," he thought to himself. "What a fine business you've gotten yourself into now." Carl had already paid him 500 marks for the software. Hess had consumed his share of spy thrillers, including generous helpings of Robert Ludlum novels with their requisite abundance of derring do, double agents, and double crossing. He suspected at once that he was suddenly subject to blackmail, and he didn't need to consult a book of West German law to know that he was now part of something not only illegal, but extremely serious. Nonetheless, Hess had no intention of interrupting his hacking routine. He had just seen the movie War Games for the first time, catching the film on German television. Thoroughly inspired, he had made it his goal to do what the movie's young protagonist had managed to do, to get into NORAD, the North American Air Defense Command in Colorado. He still had the LBL computers to himself, and they stood so wide open and so widely connected to other computers that he was certain he would be able to find a way into NORAD from LBL, given enough persistence. Hess would maintain to the end that hacking for him was merely a thrill-seeking game. His interest in military sites had only to do with there being the most forbidden fruit on a network, and nothing to do with his being an errand boy for the Soviets. Hess continued to hack.